You're listening to the New Point Community Church Podcast. For more information about New Point or to get involved, visit newpoint.org/podcast.
Every year at Christmas time, there are things that we need that we get as gifts that we really don't get very excited about, especially when we were kids. And every year at Christmas, there are gifts that we really, really hope that we get. We're like super excited and we've made a list and we just are so hopeful that we're going to get what we asked for Christmas. We ask mom and dad, we're like, here's what I want for Christmas. Or you go to the mall and sit on Santa's lap and you tell him your list. And here are the things that I really, really wanted. When I was a kid growing up, for a lot of years, it was the Matchbox City. You know, the little Matchbox cars like Hot Wheels, those kind of things. And I wanted that Matchbox City, man, where you could just play with those cars in that city. I would do that for hours, and I always hoped to get the latest Matchbox City. That was one of my favorite things. I loved the year that I got the Light Bright. Do any of you remember Light Bright? Man, I loved my Light Bright. I would do all kind of fun stuff with the Light Bright. But there was one gift that I never got that all my friends, seemingly, they had. And man, I wanted this, and I asked for it, and I never got it. And that was the one and only Stretch Armstrong, right there. All my friends had Stretch Armstrong. Do you know Stretch Armstrong? Somebody told me they still make Stretch Armstrong. And you can just stretch him in all these different directions, and like, there's really no point to him, but man, I wanted one. I wanted a Stretch Armstrong. Now, some of you spoiled little brats got everything you wanted every year for Christmas, didn't you? Well, God bless all of you. But then there's always this thing that every one of us, probably at some point in time, you got something like this. You got socks and underwear. And it looked so nice under the tree because it looked like all the other presents, all the wrapping paper matched and it looked good. And you had high expectations because it looked like it fit, you know what I mean? And then you open it up and it's socks and underwear and you're just so disappointed. Right? I mean, getting socks and underwear for Christmas traumatized Dwight so much that still to this day, he doesn't wear socks. Now, I can't vouch for the underwear, but we'll take it by faith. Now, I want to show you a video that probably, if you're a parent, you can probably relate to this, or maybe this was you as a kid. But let's take a look at this together, and this will set up where we're going today. Check it out. No, I'm not sure, but I think she may have wanted a toy. Parents, how many of you can relate? Show of hands right now. How many of you have been there and like you have felt that moment? How many of you have been there when it happens in front of other people? And you're like, oh, you're so embarrassed. It's always fun to watch, usually the mom, start making excuses or trying to help them out of it. You know, especially like if grandma gets them something like that. And the kid is just like, that's not what I want. I want a toy. I want it. And mom's like, oh, that's going to be so nice on you. Oh, you needed one of those. You needed, it was going to, oh, I bet it fits perfect. They always do that kind of a thing. And even as adults, though, we get stuff that when we open it up, we're kind of disappointed. We're kind of like, oh, man. I wanted a toy. You know what I mean? You just, here's the thing, that we're better at disguising it now. We don't show it as obvious as what we saw in that video. We just disguise our disappointment. Maybe, ladies, you told your husband one time that there was this purse that you really wanted. Let's just use that as an example. But you weren't super clear, like, I want this purse. And so your husband decided to get a little creative and think outside the box. And he went and got you something different, but he wraps it up and it's under the tree. And you're looking at it, you're going, that's about the right size box. You know, that's about the right weight. You know what I mean? I think there's a good chance that could be the purse. And it gets placed under the Christmas tree. And then you open that up on Christmas Day. And it is not the purse. Instead, it's like a box of Nutrisystem or something like that. And you're just so disappointed. Or guys, maybe you wanted the new iPhone. I don't know. And you were dropping hints here and there. And then you see this thing wrapped up underneath the tree. And boy, that's about the right size. That feels like the right weight. That's probably the iPhone. And you open it up and it's like ear hair trimmer. You know what I mean? Because sometimes we don't get what we want, but we get what we need. And as we continue our series this morning, I'm gonna share a verse with you, just right out of the gate here, that goes with our theme of not always getting what you want, but getting what you need. And here's what it is. It's in Romans chapter 15, verse 13. It says, I pray that God, who gives you hope, will keep you happy and full of peace as you believe in him. May you overflow with hope through the power of the Holy Spirit. Now, I want us just to focus on that phrase there. May you overflow with hope. May you overflow with hope. Before we go any further, it might be good to define what hope is if we're going to hang out there. So let me show you a biblical definition for hope, a confident expectation of good. Now, we use hope. We just kind of throw that word around like, I hope I get this for Christmas, or, you know, I hope this or I hope that. Or you might even say, I hope the Browns win today. But I got to ask you, Browns fans, they are better. There's no doubt. There's no denying that. But are you at a place right now where you have a confident expectation that they will win? I don't think we're quite there yet. But that's what hope is, a confident expectation for good, that God works things out for good. You know, we live in a world that has lost hope. Isn't it true? And what happens when you lose hope? You can get cynical. I think really easy to become discouraged. A lot of times just apathetic, like whatever. See, that's our natural tendency. And my guess is that if you're really honest about it, most of us are not overflowing with hope right now. Some of us here today are not even looking forward to Christmas this year. In fact, you're kind of looking forward to the end of 2018 because it's been a rough year and things have not turned out the way that you thought they would or the way you wanted them to. You wanted a toy, and that's not what you got. Some of you maybe lost your job this year and you're having such a hard time finding a new job because the job market is tight and you're having a hard time making ends meet. Some of you maybe graduated college this year and you thought, man, I'll just slide right into the workforce and I'll have a great job and things will go well. And suddenly you find yourself living at home with mom and dad, working somewhere you didn't want to work coming out of college. Living with mom, that's not what they wanted. That's not what you wanted. You wanted a toy. You wanted a toy, and it's not what you got. Some of you were hoping that this is the year that you finally have a child and be able to start a family, maybe. And you thought this Christmas celebration this year would be different and special, and it didn't happen for you, and you feel like there's just this hole in your heart, and nobody really understands how painful it is. Maybe you lost someone you love this year, and there's going to be an empty chair at the dinner table at Christmas, and you're already dreading it because you know how much you're going to miss that person's laughter and their company and their love this year. Maybe you got married this year and you were counting on happily ever after and you just had these high expectations, but then it didn't take very long for things to get really real, really fast. And all of a sudden, you unwrapped it and it ain't what you thought it was going to be. And there's just so much disappointment. You wanted a toy. Maybe Christmas just doesn't even seem all that appealing to you right now because you've got relational ickiness. Or maybe you know that it means you got to deal with your ex. Or there's child custody issues surrounding Christmas and it just gets weird. Or there's that family member that's just so, so needy. And you're just going, oh man, this is not going to be fun. Maybe this is the year you were hoping to get married and it didn't happen. And instead, you're walking out of here today alone. And it's just so painful. Well, today, I want us to unwrap a story in the Bible. And you might find it a little odd that we're going to go to this story in the Bible, especially at Christmas time. First of all, because of this reason, this story is found in the Old Testament. So this is before the birth of Christ. And also, you might find it a little odd because when you first read this story, you might think, well, there's really no significance to these people in this story. There's really nothing all that special. You might even ask, why is this even in the Bible? And why would we, 1 week ahead of Christmas, be studying the Old Testament book of Ruth? Well, because there's a story in the book of Ruth about somebody who battled what a lot of us are battling right now at Christmas time. So let me give you a little background about the book of Ruth. When you first open the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, it's a small book, only 4 chapters. Right away in the first chapter, we learn this, that there was a famine in the land there. And there was a man named Elimelech. And Elimelech decided that because of the famine, he was there in Canaan, and because of the famine, he was going to move his family out to a foreign country, a place called Moab. He thought he would just move them away. Now, here's what's interesting. Elimelech's name meant God is my king. But Elimelech didn't live up to his name because he didn't trust in God to meet his needs. Instead, he said, I'm going to trust in Moab. I'm going to trust in this foreign land to get my food, to meet my needs, to be my supply. Now, Elimelech had a wife named Naomi. Now, here's what the name Naomi means. Pleasant and sweet. Isn't that interesting? Pleasant and sweet. Now, I'll stop right there because I have a daughter named Naomi. She really is pleasant and sweet. She was appropriately named. Elimelech had 2 sons with Naomi. And they had really weird names. Their names were Mahlon and Chilion. Now you might think, well, those are just, you know, different language names. But it, translated, here's what their names meant, literally. Mahlon and Chilion meant sick and dying. So just let me say, if you're planning on having kids this year and you have boys, don't do that to them, okay? I'd like you to meet my 2 sons. Here they are, Ebali and Hepatitis. Anyway, as the story unfolds, these 2 boys, they grow up and they fall in love with 2 Moabite women. Now, keep this in mind. They're in a foreign land, a pagan culture. These people are not believers in the one true God. And by the time you get to the end of the 2nd paragraph of Ruth chapter 1, tragedy strikes. Check this out. Naomi's husband, Elimelech, dies. Now, we don't know why he dies. It doesn't say if it was old age or a heart attack or he got run over by a camel. We don't really know. But we know that suddenly he dies. And then, unbelievably, a short time later, both of Naomi's sons die. That's right, sick and dying, actually died. Big shock to everyone, right? And so now you've got 3 widows. You've got Naomi, and you've got her 2 daughters-in-law, and they're all grieving the loss of their husbands. Now, can you imagine the grief, if you're Naomi, of losing your husband and your sons in a short amount of time? You see, these 3 women were battling what many of us battle at Christmas time, and that's loneliness. And so Naomi decides after her husband's death that it would be best for her to move back to Canaan, to move back to her homeland, the promised land, to move back among her family and her people. So she decides to go that way because there was no welfare system in Moab. There was no church there to look after her. Really no help for her and her daughters-in-law. They were all battling loneliness. And her daughters-in-law, by the way, were so attached to her that they said, "We'll go with you. How about if we go to Canaan with you? That they would leave their homeland of Moab and go to the promised land with Naomi. And about halfway through the journey, Naomi turns to them and she basically says something like that. This, listen, girls, listen. It's so nice what you're doing here. But I got to tell you, I think you'd be better off if you went back. Because you don't need a mother-in-law, the baggage and just the hassle of looking after me and all that stuff. You need men. That's what you need. So why don't you go back to your homeland? And that way, you know, you might be better off if you did that. And so one of the daughters-in-law, Orpah, that was her name, Orpah. Interesting name, by the way. When we named Naomi, I really wanted to name her Orpah because I thought Orpah Bun had a really nice ring to it. But my wife Jenny overruled me and we settled on Naomi. But anyway, Orpah turns around, no hard feelings, but she goes back. But the other daughter-in-law, her name is Ruth. And Ruth insisted on going on with Naomi. And Ruth makes this statement. Many of you have heard this before. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 16, here's what she says. Where you go, I will go. She's talking to Naomi. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. So Ruth and Naomi go on this journey to Naomi's hometown. And her hometown is a little town that you've probably heard of, a small town in Canaan that was called Bethlehem. Oh, there is a tie to the Christmas story. There is a connection. Did you know that Bethlehem was a little town of like less than 200 people? That's why the song is, O Little Town of Bethlehem. It really was little. And so when Naomi returned, it was big news in the little town of Bethlehem. And people started to talk. I mean, everybody knows everybody and word spread. Is that really Naomi? And she back? And who's that she's got with her? And so everybody's talking about this. And then Naomi says something like this. She's like, listen, y'all. Yes, I'm back. But listen, don't call me Naomi anymore. Don't call me Pleasant and Sweet, because my life has been bitter lately. Notice what she says in verse 20. Don't call me Naomi, she told them. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. Can you feel the weight of those words? Some of you are there right now. Like, you know, you're like, that's, I feel it, yeah. I understand where Naomi's coming from. Naomi was bitter. She's angry. She's mad at God. She's like, he didn't hold up his end of the deal. I wanted a toy. And so you read the story and you think, well, Naomi's story then is basically a story about loss. She lost her husband. She lost her two adult sons. She lost her home. She lost her land. It's a story about loss. But here's the question that I want to ask you today. Does the story have to be about loss? She loses a lot. It's incredible. It's painful. But is that what it has to be about? Jerry Sitzer was driving his minivan when a drunk driver hit him. And in the accident, Jerry lost his wife and his mother and his young daughter. Three generations all at once. And he wasn't even injured in the accident. Can you imagine that kind of pain? He wrote a book about his journey through grief, and it's called A Grace Disguised. I want you to check out one of the things that he says in his book right here. He says, the experience of loss does not have to be the defining moment in our lives. Instead, the defining moment can be our response to the loss. Isn't that amazing? Another way to look at it is like this. We don't get to choose which parts we're going to play in the story of life. But we do get to decide how we're going to play those parts that we're given. And so we all reach this place in each of our stories that we have to decide, is my story going to be defined by the loss, or could my story be about something else? Could it be about something different? And I know, it's hard. I know that's hard. Because we tend to focus on what's right in front of us. That's just our natural tendency. There's this thing in our box, and we open up this package, and we're just so disappointed because, man, it's socks and underwear. And I wanted a toy. Or it's a sweater. I wanted a toy. And it's not what we wanted. My daughter, Naomi, and I were talking about the story of Naomi from the Bible. And Naomi, my Naomi, says to me, "Dad, the story of Naomi is really a story of tragedy." And I said, it is. But it doesn't end that way. It starts out that way. But here's what we're about to find out in this story. If there's one word to describe Naomi's story, it's not loss, it's not tragedy, it's redemption. Now, after Naomi and Ruth arrive in Bethlehem, here's what happens. Ruth goes into the fields where they have just harvested. The farmers had come through and harvested. It's barley season, and Ruth is picking up the scraps from the grain. She's just picking up the leftovers, the stuff that just fell on the ground that they didn't get. She had to do something to support her mother-in-law and her, and that's what she did. It's not a glamorous job. It would be like picking aluminum cans out of the garbage can or alongside of the highway for a living. And it was there that Ruth gets noticed by someone else in this story. A wealthy single guy who'd never been married, whose name was Boaz. He's the owner of the field. And Boaz notices her, and we read about this in Ruth chapter 2, verse 3. Here's what it says. So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of, wait a minute, who? Elimelech. Well, isn't that interesting? As it turned out, wouldn't you know, it just so happened, coincidentally, she ends up working in the field of Boaz, this wealthy, single, godly guy who, unbeknown to Ruth, is a relative of her husband, her late husband. The story continues. Boaz notices Ruth. He likes Ruth. He's interested in Ruth. When Naomi, her mother-in-law, catches wind of this, she does what a lot of mother-in-laws do. She starts meddling. Right? She tries to be matchmaker. And so here's what Naomi says to Ruth. She says, here's what I want you to do, okay? Because I see something happening here. I want you to bathe. I want you to put on your best perfume. I want you to get all dolled up. And then I want you to go to the barn where Boaz is. And he's going to be working, but then he's going to eat. And then he's going to lay down. And he's going to go to sleep right there in the barn. And what I want you to do is I want you to lie down at his feet. Lie down at his feet while he sleeps. And then you just see what happens from there. And you're like, well, what happens from there? Well, it's not what you're thinking, okay? She actually is telling Ruth to present herself as a bride, to announce to Boaz that she's available, that she's willing to relocate. Listen to what happens next. Ruth chapter 3, verse 8, here's what it says. Suddenly, around midnight, he, Boaz, wakened and sat up, startled. There was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he demanded. He's still like, what in the world's going on? You know what I mean? "It is I, sir, Ruth," she replied. make me your wife according to God's law, for you are my close relative. In other words, you are a relative of my late husband's family. Let's keep going here. I love this part. Here's what Boaz says. Thank God for a girl like you. Isn't that great? Thank God for a girl like you, he exclaimed. Now, don't worry about a thing, my child. I'll handle all the details. For everyone knows what a wonderful person you are. Isn't that an awesome story? But I think it's also a very practical story for us, especially at Christmas time, because it has so many personal implications for us. By the way, Boaz is referred to throughout the book of Ruth as this, the guardian redeemer. Have you heard that phrase before? There are different translations that call it a kinsman redeemer. Maybe you're familiar with that. Maybe you've never heard of that before. So let me take a moment and explain what a guardian redeemer is. When a man fell on hard times in those days and he had to sell his land, there was a law that said his nearest relative could come in and buy it, like he had dibs, so to speak. And that way the land could stay in the family. It wouldn't go to some other tribe or some other people that they don't even know. But they'd be able to keep properties from being lost in that way. And so enter Boaz, who says, I'll take the property of Elimelech and I'll take responsibility for Ruth, because here's how this worked. You didn't just take the land, you took the people that came with the land, the family members. It's worth noting that this is no small act of kindness, especially when you consider that Ruth is a foreigner. She's a Moabite. She comes from a pagan country. She comes from a culture that people in this culture, they wouldn't even want somebody like Ruth. And Boaz says, I will love who nobody else will love. I will care for that which no one else will care for. I will redeem the one who no one else will redeem. I will be her guardian redeemer. The story continues. Boaz falls for Ruth. He becomes her guardian redeemer. But actually, there was a closer relative who actually had dibs on the land. He had first rights here. And so Boaz is going to this guy and he's thinking, man, how am I going to frame this so this works out the way that I want it to work out? And so he goes to this other relative who actually has dibs on the land, and he says something like that. You know, there's a land that you can redeem. I mean, it can be yours. You can have it if you want it. But oh, by the way, the day you acquire the land, you're stuck with Ruth. I mean, this Moabite woman, you know, the foreigner, the widow. You get her. It's a package deal. It's like if you wanted to buy a house and the price is so good and you say to the realtor, man, this is too good to be true. I can't believe this house would be this cheap. There must be a catch. And the realtor says, oh, there is a catch. There's a mother-in-law that lives upstairs and she stays with the house. And you're like, and that's what this relative did. He's like, you know what? I'm out. You can take the whole thing. That's great. And so in the last chapter of the book of Ruth, here's what we read. So Boaz married Ruth, and when he slept with her, the Lord gave her a son. This thing is pretty cool. Amazing story of an amazing guy who had no obligation to do this. It was just pure grace. And what does Boaz get in this whole deal? He gets an awesome wife. And what was Boaz's life before all this? Ruthless. Oh, come on, that was good. Maybe the only thing you remember. Boaz comes along and he says, I will buy the property. I will take responsibility. And he goes out of his way to redeem this foreign woman. Now, as it turns out, some of you may know who Boaz's mother is. Some of you may remember about a time when the Israelites were about to take the promised land. And they sent two spies into Jericho. And they were housed and protected by a prostitute in that city named Rahab. And as it turns out, Rahab had a son. And as it turned out, she named her son Boaz. And as it turned out, he grew up to be a godly man. perhaps because his own mother had been from a foreign land and she was transformed from following pagan gods to following the one true God. And Boaz was then able to show grace and generosity to Ruth. Now you think about this story and you think it's as if the Christmas present was open and man, it looked really crappy on the outside of the box. And everything is bad for Naomi. Everything is bad for Ruth. But then over time, they further unpacked the box. And it was better than they could ever imagine. This is what I'm saying. Some of you, I mean, you got a box this year. You're getting a box for Christmas, or maybe you got it a while ago. But you got this box, and you're like, yeah, I mean, that's about the right size. It feels about the right weight. You know, you shake it, and you're going, you know, this could be pretty good. And then you tear into it, and you open it up. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that you didn't see coming. And you're looking at the outside of your box. And you're going, I wanted a toy. What is this? It's not what I wanted. I wanted a toy. Here's what we do. We focus on what's right there in front of us. We focus right there. And all I can say right now, what I want to say is this stuff that we see on the box, by the way, it's just snapshots. It's just a snapshot. But here's the thing. Hope lies in the bigger picture, not the snapshots. Because before Naomi and Ruth gave up, they had to look inside the box. And what they found inside the box is that Ruth, as we read, gave birth to a son. So a story that sounds like a story of loss for Naomi, turns out she gets a grandson. And this grandson, she finds out, brings hope to them. Hope to their family. Hope that they never saw coming, because attached to that was a future. Their family is going to continue. Their family will carry on. They will be all right, because that grandson brings blessing. And that grandson ultimately ushers in salvation. But check it out. It's not just for their family. It's way, way bigger than that. And I'll get to that in a minute. In fact, the last look we have at Naomi in the book of Ruth is of her holding and caring for her new grandson. And we read these really important words in Ruth 4:17. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Who's David? That's right. King David. King David, Naomi's great-grandson. Great-great-grandson is King David. Ruth's great-grandson is King David. Now, here's where this all comes together. When we get to the New Testament, we open up the book of Matthew, and we read the account of Matthew in chapter 1, where we first read about the Christmas story, and the genealogy of Jesus is written there. And here's what we read in Matthew 1. I want you to see this next thing. All those people in the story of Naomi and Ruth are there. There's Rahab, the prostitute. We read about this in Matthew chapter 1. She has a son named Boaz. He marries Naomi's daughter-in-law, Ruth. They have a son named Obed. Obed has a son named Jesse. Jesse has a son who's King David. And eventually, way down the line, that Naomi and Ruth never even saw coming, because it was way down in the box. The Savior of the world, Jesus. The blessing for the whole world that started from a story that looked like a tragedy. Because you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, you just may get what you need. So if you're here today and you've unwrapped the box and you don't like what's on the outside of it, you don't see anything other than what it says, here's what you need to know before you throw in the towel. Now, I know it's hard and I know it's painful. And I know some of you are just so close to giving up right now and you feel like you're so prayed out. Like, I don't know if I can even get another prayer out of me because it's just so rough for me right now. Before you give up, remember, God's not finished with your story. And loss does not have to define your story, but your response to the loss can. There may be some of you who are not even sure how you're going to get through Christmas this year. You wanted a toy. Maybe you don't think you can hang on much longer because of what's on the outside of your box. But through the person of Jesus Christ, your guardian redeemer, you can. What did Ruth do? She made herself available. You know what we call that? Surrender. Naomi said, "Why don't you make yourself available to her?" She nudged her. Make yourself. She surrendered. She made herself available. And you know what happened? Boaz said, "I'll take responsibility for you." Our guardian redeemer is Jesus Christ, the hope of the world. When we surrender to him, you know what he says? "I'll take responsibility for you." Because he takes full responsibility for the life that is fully surrendered to him. We started with Romans 5:13. I want to finish with that. Here's what it says one more time. "I pray that God, who gives you hope, will keep you happy and full of peace as you believe in him. May you overflow with hope through the power of the Holy Spirit." That's my prayer for you today, that you would overflow with hope through the power of the Holy Spirit. Can I just be Naomi for you today? Can I just encourage you, challenge you to make yourself available and then see what happens next? Jesus came to bring you hope because that's what you need. We don't always get what we want, but that's why he came. Endless hope and relentless joy started with a baby boy. And if there's ever a person in the history of the world that knows that loss doesn't have to define your story, it's Jesus Christ. Because God took the worst thing in the history of the world, the worst thing ever on the worst day possible, and that is the cross, and he turned it into the best possible thing. Salvation, hope, redemption for you and me. And that can be your story. Will you pray with me? God, I just want to thank you for the gift you give us in the Old Testament of the story of Naomi and Ruth, and just this whole idea that our stories don't have to be defined by loss. And I pray for my friends here today who are hurting and they're struggling and Christmas is hard right now because it doesn't feel like there's any hope. And I pray that right now they would experience the hope that Jesus brings. That we'd experience your hope maybe in a new and fresh way like we never have before, and that we would find ourselves in a position where we make ourselves available to you, where we surrender to you and have you take responsibility for our lives. God, thanks for that. Thanks for Christmas and what it means. And I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.
If you want to talk to someone about a decision you've made or let us know how God's moving through this series, visit newpoint.org/podcast. Be sure to stay connected with us throughout the week on social media, and don't forget to subscribe through iTunes. Thanks for listening to today's message, and we hope you continue to realize and reach your full potential in Jesus Christ.